Myself, I'm now an 11-year resident of Sonoma County. We bought our 15-acre plot up in Dry Creek Valley back at the end of 1999, and just love the area, love the spirit of the area, and have gotten involved with trying to help in this community, not just with One Country Baseball, but we have developed some economic development initiatives. Two in particular are the California Stock Exchange, with our dream of having local units such as the Sebastopol Exchange, which feeds to the California Stock Exchange, and with this concept of creating index funds where people can invest and then have that money directed to their own community and some tools to invest in your own community. But at the same time, having a statewide stock exchange that has some very particular unique features to it. We also developed Leonhardt's Launchpad, which is designed to be an incubator booster program. Incubator meaning a business incubator, so helping small businesses to incubate up in their starting stages, and we provide a series of tools to help small companies to do that. Andy wanted me to mention a little bit about how I came here. My background is in developing products for treating heart disease. I have 21 patents in the area, and one took off, and we had a few employees back in 1986, and we were able to grow to 4,500 employees by the time I got to 1998, and we merged with a local company here called Arterial Vascular Engineering. Robert Lashinsky, one of the co-founders, lives right here in Sebastopol with his wife, Jody. Bob and I actually grew up one small town apart up in Minneapolis where it's a little bit colder. Mm-hmm. He was in Elk River, and I was in Anoka. And we ended up meeting while we were in the waiting room of the St. Luke's Hospital in Milwaukee, and the doctor who came out said, "Hey, I'm busy, but you guys should talk to each other." And that was 1996. When I came out here, he and Brad, the co-founder, they were in a little bay near the airport in Sonoma County. And then just 2 years later, they were employing well over 4,000 people in the area. And we were part of that. We started a joint venture in 96, and we merged our two companies in April 1998. And then the early part of 1999, Medtronic purchased the combined companies, and they occupy a lot of space in Santa Rosa. And they even had a building off of 12th here. They outgrew their headquarters in Fountain Grove and had buildings all over. But that brought me to the area. And once I came, just like so many people, I fell in love with the area and wanted to be more a part of it. The most exciting thing that's kind of new is this California Stock Exchange. And one of the reasons I'm out trying to talk to folks about it is to get support for that. And that came about from the experience of the follow-on company to the company that we formed originally here in the area that developed the stent grafts for repairing aortic aneurysms and stents for opening up arteries around the heart. Bob and I, when we sold to Medtronic, we felt bad that we weren't finishing the job, meaning somebody that had a heart attack, we would open up the vessels, renew blood flow, but if the area was already damaged, renewing that blood flow didn't bring the dead tissue, the scar tissue, back to pumping blood. So we formed a new company called BioHeart, hired 16 people here in Santa Rosa and some people in Florida, and started building up, and we've ended up raising $145 million over a dozen years now, and we're the furthest along in applying stem cells to repair damaged hearts. But how it fits into the story of the California Stock Exchange is that in 2008, we attempted to do an IPO. We wanted to raise $30 million, which was going to be more than enough to finish our clinical trials, plus carry forward a number of product developments that we had in the pipeline, a biological pacemaker and biological repair of heart valves. And we really believe that your body and your heart is made of cells. It's better to repair them with living, natural cells than it is to use artificial drugs or metals or fabrics. And even though we had spent most of our life working with metals and fabrics and electronics, we kind of had a change of heart that we really believe the future is more natural therapies. And what happened in that year is we went to do an IPO, and it was a bad year for doing an IPO, so we had to downgrade our dreams from $30 million down to $7 million, and that happened to be the cost to do the one clinical trial to bring the stem cells to market, the final cost. We had already spent $80-some million before then. We went to raise the money. We went through the whole process of an IPO. It was the first time I went through the whole process. Bob had gone through it before. You know, you're so darn busy, you're not paying attention to how many bills are being racked up, and they send you to like 35 cities in 60 days, and you don't even remember where you're waking up because you're pitching the company, pitching the company, pitching the company. But finally, we got it done, and we only raised $6.5 million. We downgraded again from $7 million to $6.5 million. And then we went to go you know, through the books as the dust settled to figure out, well, how much do we have left to actually do the clinical trial? And when the accountant walked in my office and put on the desk that it cost us $4.8 million to raise the $6.5 million, and we didn't have enough to do the clinical trial, I was absolutely angry. And my first reaction is I thought I'd fly to Washington, walk into Congress, and start punching people, but I decided that probably wasn't the best decision. So I decided to channel all that frustration and energy into something more productive, and that was when the day that the California Stock Exchange was founded. And the idea of the California Stock Exchange is that the reason that we had to spend $4.8 million is lawyers, accountants, bureaucrats, and insurance companies took all the money. And because the system was messed up, that there's so many obstacles in front of this process of going public, that, and we were trying to do it right. So the reason we spent so much on all these people is that we were trying to do things conservatively and do them absolutely properly. And when we got punished financially for doing that, and when there's a longer time, I'll give you the longer version of the story. But the California Stock Exchange, if you go to raise $7 million, it'll cost about $40,000 for legal fees and accounting fees and bureaucratic fees and insurance fees. And most of the money with our exchange will go to the people who are trying to create jobs, will go to the people that are trying to pursue their dreams. In our case, we're trying to save lives and reduce costs using stem cells to repair damaged hearts, and it has so many benefits, not just the jobs of our company, but heart failure is the leading cause of hospitalization in the United States, the single leading drain on Medicare in the United States. The more money is spent on hospitalizing heart failure patients than all other diseases combined, and we have a way to try to reduce that hospitalization and improve lives and create jobs, and yet all of these costs were in our way. So that started the California Stock Exchange. A group of us who are like-minded have been working on it ever since then, and as time goes on, I've been recruiting people to join and help that believe in this cause. And what we've done is we've created a website, calstockexchange.com, and we have a set of things that we can do right now to help anybody who has a dream, and we have a tagline, which is, this is not your father's stock exchange. And we want to emphasize that this is different, and it's different in a number of ways. One of the ways that it's different is that our tagline is, any artist, activist, entrepreneur who wishes to pursue their dreams, this is a tool for being able to do that. And we've taken the best in each service category and have created an agreement with these different vendors. So we have microfinancing, peer-to-peer lending, crowdfunding, the ability to do private placements online. These are all electronic tools, modern tools, package tools. I think we found another one yesterday, which is Lions. We're looking for more ideas, but all of the ideas have a common thread: to get money to people that have dreams and to stimulate this untapped energy. I really believe myself that the biggest tragedy of this recession that we all very much know that we're in is not so much the money loss, it's the human energy loss, that so many people wake up every day in the doldrums. They're not happy to be going to work. They have ideas, but they can't get funded. They want to do something, but there's so many obstacles in the way of doing it, and as a result, their energy into each day is so much under what it could be. And what we really want to do with this is fuel people's dreams to be energized to go into every day. You know, I'm a very lucky person that because of these inventions, I'm able to go into every day and play baseball league and play out some of the dreams I've had as a kid and have fun at work. But I see other people, and I know and understand very well the suffering going on, and that it's rare to find, you know, people that are able to do that and want, with the California Stock Exchange, to find a way to do that. And as we've been evolving this idea, we've been taking input, and one of the biggest inputs that fits with this conversation and fits with Andy's beliefs is dividing this California Stock Exchange into local units: the Sebastopol Exchange, the Santa Rosa Exchange, the Windsor Exchange, the Healdsburg Exchange, kind of like this Cox.com newspaper, which divides into local units with local management. And we want to align with local finance firms. We don't have to have a control over all of ourselves. We'd like it to be decentralized. So in Sebastopol, we're going to look for a local money manager that is credible, that would be able to house a fund, a Sebastopol investment fund. And people would have an opportunity to invest in that, and then that would go into companies that would be listed on our exchange that would be local money vested in the local economy. And you would go to our exchange to see the little, if you hit on Sebastopol Stock Exchange, you'd see the nice little ticker tape going across with the symbol, and you'd be able to communicate about what you're doing and get excitement. Part of the reforms that we seek with the California Stock Exchange is to make use of all these social media tools. Right now, if you just put on Facebook or Twitter that you're trying to raise money for an apple farm, just by saying that, you break about 35 laws and you could be taken away to jail. And we want to eliminate at least for this particular exchange. And we're not saying that the entire financial system should change to this, but when people come into our exchange, they understand what they're getting into. They're getting into something more local. They're getting into something where there's not going to be that amount of accounting scrutiny and that amount of legal scrutiny. But you also know that more of the money is going to go towards the cause, that you want to invest in people that you believe in your community. The money is going to go towards that and not be taken off to New York lawyers or to other places. If you want to be more in the old way, you can still go to the New York Stock Exchange. You can still go to NASDAQ. But I will point out that if you do have a small company, you have a friend who started a small company, you're unlikely to be able to invest in their company through the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ. This year, there's probably only going to be 12 companies in the United States that were able to get public funding, an IPO, through our current market system. And we all heard recently that the New York Stock Exchange is trying to sell themselves to the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, so that people block that. But we almost have the New York Stock Exchange being owned by the Germans. And NASDAQ keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And they don't like, they basically, if you're a small company, they tell you, we don't want you here because you're too much trouble and you're too much paperwork for too little money. We're just on the opposite. We're going to say, big companies, we don't want you here. We not only want small companies, but we also have a condition that anybody coming into our exchange has to fill a statement about social good. We want to be the stock exchange where social enterprises, conscious capitalism enterprises, find a way to get capital. And, you know, we're not going to have the strictest definition. You know, if somebody puts in that statement of what they're doing for social good, we're going to have a broad acceptance of what could be. We're not going to be overly critical, but I don't think any tobacco companies are going to trade in our exchange, but companies that are having sustainable farming will. Companies that are protecting the environment, companies that are helping people's health will be there. And we're not only doing that because we love that and that's what we believe in, the founders, but we're doing that also because we think it's a strategy, a clever strategy, to get enough support for this reform that we're trying to push through. There's the left and there's the right. You know all who follow politics. And some of the things that we're advocating, like reducing regulation, reducing costs, that favors some of the classic positions of the right. But some of the things of only accepting socially good enterprises and making things local and sustainable enterprises, that's more of the causes of the left. And we think by coming to this common ground in the middle, we're going to get enough momentum to be able to get the votes to push this reform through. So right now we have a series of packages. So if you come to our website, you can get peer-to-peer lending, you get microfinancing. There's a bunch of great tools we found that are legally available now. But then the big thing that I just talked about, we have to get state approval, and we might have to get federal approval, and we're seeking your support to do that. So we have the website, the Cal Stock Exchange, and we have a ticker tape. But we formally do not have an independent exchange. We use that term, Cal Stock Exchange. And if you go to the website, if you want to do peer-to-peer lending or crowdfunding or private placements online, we've chosen the best partner vendors to do that. So how we make money is somebody comes to our site and then they go to their site and they buy their services. We get a small slice of the people who came through our site. And we're trying to add value by having one simple application form, and we plug you into all the different sources of financing so you don't have to do a form here and a form here and a form here and a form there. And then we also take that one simple form that's filled out, and we actually come back based on your particular unique situation and give a series of recommendations. You know, you don't have to do it, or suggestions or recommendations that within all of the services available that we've affiliated with, where we recommend your particular company focus on getting your financing. And then we have services separate with an incubator service where if you don't feel comfortable to put your slide presentation or your business plan, or you have trouble with your patent getting issued, we have a series of help services to help guide you through. Or if you're good on that, you don't have to do that. You can just go right into getting the capital. What we can offer now legally is one set of packages. Our big dream is to have these reforms. So David Weald is a member of our group. He has gone to Congress twice to testify on bringing back the small company IPOs. And he passionately has a pitch that he got a grant from Grant Thornton, and they helped put together a beautiful slide presentation. And his slide presentation basically shows that if these reforms are accepted to make it easier and less expensive for a small company to raise capital, we're going to create 23 million jobs over the next decade just with this package of reforms. And he has it backed up with analysis and economists who agree with him. And he's gone twice to Congress, and they haven't bought the story yet. But we're working on it. And we're a little frustrated that it moved so slow in Washington. We just were aware that Michael Rossi was appointed the job czar of California. So we're going to go to him as soon as we can get in and pitch this idea. And part of our concept is if we can't get the federal government to move fast enough on this, we'll start it in California. And the federal regulations for securities, if we have a California investor investing in a California company, it's outside of federal jurisdiction. So we could have a California stock exchange and just exclude everybody in all the other states. You'd have to have both the buyer and seller within the state, but this is a pretty big state. Mm-hmm. And at least get a start. We can show the rest of the country what we can do. But we are going to do this social enterprise. And I get some of my friends on the right who say, well, why do that and don't do that? And it just happens that our founding members are believers in the new age of social capitalism, conscious capitalism. We not only think that it's the right thing to do, but we also think that it's a good business model. And we want to set the example that doing well by doing right is going to be the standard rather than
exception.
We really believe within 3 to 5 years, if we got every one of the reform measures that we want to go through, we would do that. And it goes two ways. It not only is making it easier to raise capital, but a whole series of packages that would cause people to have incentives to put money into this. Incentives for angel investors, incentives for local people, incentives for funds. We even have incentives for immigrants coming in. If somebody has an immigrant application and they agree to invest $40,000 a year for 10 years in a row in a small company here, they get fast-tracked through the immigrant status. So, and we keep gathering more ideas because we need it on both sides. But we need buyers to come in and we need sellers to come in. And the reforms are basically set up both ways to make it more attractive both ways. And people always ask us the classic question. Somebody's probably going to ask, you know, how do you avoid the fraudsters from taking advantage of this? And we're thinking of creative ways of doing that. But the two big ones are that we will not expect someone to be listed on our exchange unless they have a qualified endorsing investor that's put their own money in and is agreeing to put their face and the reputation of their firm on the same profile sheet on our stock exchange as the company. So if it's an oil company, we want somebody that knows about soil samples and oil to make sure that the company's actually drilling an oil well. Or if it's a medical company, we want a qualified medical expert to be an endorsing investor. And when we accept people on the exchange, we'll only accept one. So, you know, as much as we want to make it super easy and reduce paperwork and legal costs, we have to do something, though. But usually good companies that are in good practice, they usually find one good endorsing investor anyhow. So really, we're just doing what good companies normally would do. But if you can't find one investor in your field, if you're in the farm business, if you can't find an experienced farmer that has put their own money in, we're not going to let you on the exchange. For one thing, it would be local in that if you're a Sebastopol company, you'd be dual listed on the Sebastopol exchange, which is a unit of that. And people that were just interested in Sebastopol companies would click there, and they'd only see all the profiles of the Sebastopol companies. But that same company, if they choose to, they can be dually listed on the California State Exchange. So somebody in San Diego happens to want to invest in a Sebastopol company, you would also have access to that. As far as what makes it green and what makes it sustainable, really that just is our commitment that we're not going to accept anybody on that doesn't properly fill out that what we're doing, that socially good part of the application process. And, you know, sustainable enterprises and green enterprises would be ones that would definitely qualify for meeting the criteria of social good. This is a private exchange, and if you don't like it, you don't have to, you know, participate on it. We have $800,000 of printing costs. You talk about the environment. It's currently the SEC law. If you're a public company, every quarter you have to mail to every shareholder a thick 200-page thin paper thing with that mostly has a lot of lawyer language in it. You have to pay the lawyers to write that language, and we eliminate all that. It's just all electronic. You don't have to print anything, and instead of a 50-page form, we cut it down to 8. We actually believe more concise information that you have to still sign off. The CEO and COO have to sign off. This is accurate. We're not lying. We're not committing fraud. If you're committing fraud, you're still going to be wrong on our exchange, but we actually think that the big 200-page documents that the lawyers embed with so many warnings that it becomes useless because there's so so many warnings in there that actually, if there is a real problem, it's buried under so many pieces of paper that you don't spot it. Where with 8 pages, clear and concise, it's going to be harder to hide something, and we avoid all of the...
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, I'm a CPA.
Yeah.
And what firm did you use that for the 4.8?
We started with Grant Thornton. We paid them about $450,000. And we have no revenues because we're a biotech company
doing clinical
research. So we kept paying them to audit again and again, zero revenues.
Sure.
And then we got to a cash level so low that they decided the risk with us was too high. So then we went to another accounting firm, and we had just done 3 years of audits, and then we asked them to transfer the paperwork of the 3 years that we paid $450,000 to the new company, and they said, oh, we don't want to transfer it because it's too risky to transfer it. We might get sued. So then we had to repay for 3 years of audits to be done by the new group, and I can't remember the name.
It was much
smaller than Grant Thornton.
So it ended
up being a very...
The problem with that is... Every time an accountant signs on with this, they get sued.
Yep.
And so that's the issue. The issue is...
That's the issue.
The issue is, as a CPA, like if I did this, let's say I went with a company here in Sebastopol that I believe in, and so I did the audits and stuff like that, I know I'm going to get sued.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I'm right, wrong, does not matter. And I'm dead.
With this exchange, we're taking away some of the rights to sue. So if you invest through this exchange, you're signing a document that says that
I... But that has to go through the State Board of Accountancy here. That has to go through everybody else. And there's so many regulations. I mean, I think your idea is fantastic. I believe in ESOPs. I believe in a lot of things to get more sharing, more partnering with your employees and everybody else and keeping it local.
It's a matter of adult choice.
So I would love to talk to you at some point and tell you my experiences many, many years ago with IPOs and all that stuff. So.
I'd love to get some advice. If the people want the level of legal protection that's available in NASDAQ and New York Stock Exchange, are choices for them. And I would argue that maybe it doesn't necessarily provide more protection. There's two ways of looking at it. With us, the people who put the $6.5 million into our IPO, they wanted us to complete our clinical trials. They wanted the money to go into creating jobs and to bring in... They bought into the idea that stem cells would repair the heart. But when the money went to the lawyers, the accountants, and the insurance companies, I'm not sure if in the name of protecting them, they actually protect them. So even though all those protections were in place, I would argue that the so-called bad guys here were the people that took the money away from the patients that were going to be treated with stem cells and put it into the pockets in the name of protecting the investor. So in this choice, you have a choice. You can either pay $4.8 million and have that kind of protection or have the choice to have less and have more of it go towards the project that you wanted to invest in the first place. But either way, there's risk. In this case, the risk with our investors was that they put the money in and we didn't have the money to finish clinical trials because it all went to legal fees. So they got an investment that couldn't be completed through to the goal, and that was maybe more hurtful to them than the possibility of the risk that people like us that had a track record. We had already built 2 or 3 companies in the field and had already saved 180,000 lives. What was the chance that we were going to take the money and not do what we said we were going to do and defraud them? It was pretty low. So, not all circumstances are like our circumstance, but this is going to be an adult choice, and that's part of kind of what we're really standing up for, is that especially making it local. If you're going to see the people across the table that you're investing in, you know them in your community, that even is another level of having protection against the risk. It's a little harder to defraud people when you're in the same city. It still can happen, and it's one of the biggest criticisms against what we're doing.
And it's happened around here.
You not only have your IPO, but you have secondary offerings, you have pipe financings, just that all exists now. So anybody listed on NASDAQ, you do your IPO, you run out of money, then you do a secondary offering, then you do a pipe, and then those shares are tradable.
Yeah. So the primary market would be, you're the company, you come to me, I'm the investment bank, and you want to raise money, I just automatically give you the money. Now as the investment bank, now I can trade those funds on, say, the New York Stock Exchange, but I'd be doing it on the California Exchange. So maybe I'm like this gentleman here. I'm getting confused. You're the primary market, and then you're also the secondary market. The New York Stock Exchange and the American Exchange and NASDAQ, they're all secondary markets, right?
You know, in our case, we went on NASDAQ and we went on roadshow, and everybody that we visited on the roadshow is a company that invested. We had a banker. Banker didn't do much work. They helped us set up some of the plans.
So the investment banker didn't give you the money right away.
No, and that's not the case in any small company. No small company today does the investment banker give the money up front. They take a commission.
I'm old. You don't have any gray hair.
With big companies, that will happen. But
in the old days,
the
investment banker would just give them the money.
They don't do that anymore. No.
Yeah, not.
No. They take a commission, kind of like your real estate broker, that if they find a buyer and help set up the meeting with the buyer, then if that buyer comes in, they take their 7% cut, the banker does. But our change, we're trying to reduce investment banking services. Unfortunately, in addition to not liking lawyers and accountants and bureaucrats and insurance companies, we also don't like bankers. Because in our case, that part of that $4.8 million was the two or three bankers that we hired that really didn't do much. They took a commission on...
Yeah, but you hire them because of their name, like Goldman Sachs or whatever.
Pooled together, you know, $6.5 million of shares and dispersed it to all the people who signed the thing that they were going to buy the shares, and then the bankers took a 7% commission, plus all their travel fees and their other fees. So it ends up being, you know, of the $6.5 million, probably $700,000 went to bankers, so a little over 10%. We consider ourselves an incubator booster service, so we don't really focus like some of the other incubators on physical space, and we have access to different places where we know space is available, and particular types of space, like we have an affiliation with some clean rooms up in Santa Rosa. But really, to answer the question shortly, the three things that we're doing different is that we teach a particular model, the bootstrapping model. When I founded World Medical, I was sleeping in my car and only had $600 and didn't have a rich uncle and was able to step by step build it. So I've always been a speaker on the subject of people who believe that they can't start a business because they don't have $1 million and they don't have anyone willing to give them $1 million that they want to give up before they even start. We walk them through this model, and real simply, it's that you do something of a service to the eventual customer that you want to have for the big product. You do something right now in the short term where you can start developing a relationship. You know, everybody usually has some idea that's going to take more money and more time that's a little bit bigger, but they don't have the money to instantly get that to market. So we have a model where you have something where you sell to the same customer, you get to know each other, and while you're there, you ask questions about this product. And in the meantime, though, every time you visit, you have something to make some money on to at least kind of nurse the business along while you're either trying to get capital or while you're little by little by little moving the bigger project on. And that's what we did. We started wholesaling products, and then we started to private label balloon catheters. Then we started to manufacture balloon catheters that had a quicker approval process. And then finally, we developed implantable stent grafts and pacemakers and all these fancy things. But we had to do it step by step, little by little. And we started with one customer. And that's what we advocate, is start your business by finding one person who's willing to buy something that you're willing to offer and then provide immaculate, incredible service, better than they've ever gotten ever before, and then go to a second customer when you're ready to take a second customer on. The other things we offer is just a series of services, the mentorship, alignment, and the latest thing we're doing is we're taking MBA students who need as their assignment to build business plans and investor slide presentations, and we're matching them with companies that don't have money to do that, and we get the two together where the student basically does free labor for the company and gets a credit in school for that. Really simply, we try to help people who don't have a lot of money to be able to get a start.
Just to let you know, part of the reason that I've been dragging Howard to these different business incubators is that I think they need to be connected. I mean, we visited the Share Exchange in Santa Rosa yesterday. We're going to be back in Santa Rosa at the University of Northern California off of Sebastopol Road. I think there's a value in connecting all the incubators. And so I see some like the Launchpad being a connector, the Go Local people being a connector.